you for tuning in to the Javier Morquecho Show, where entrepreneurs, corporate executives, and thought leaders come to share their stories. You can check out JavierMorquecho.com to learn how to start, grow, and scale your business from leading experts who want to help you succeed. I'm Javier Morquecho, your host for the day. We're joined by Sarah Boyd, president and founder of Simply Inc., which runs Simply and Simply Digital Network. Simply connects consumers with top-tier designers, stylists, and tastemakers in the fashion industry through conferences. The Simply Digital Network provides digital management, advisory, and content creation for celebrity clients. This year, in 2017, Simply was acquired by Nylon, a pop culture and fashion media company. So hi, Sarah. Welcome. Thank you for being here today.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And my goal for today is to share your story and to talk about how you started, grew, and scaled your company. And first off, congratulations on being acquired.
Thank you.
So I want to ask, when is a business ready to be acquired?
Well, I mean, some people don't ever want to be acquired, you know? It really depends on the goal of the entrepreneur. You know, when I started the business, I always had that vision in mind. I didn't know when it would happen. I was lucky that in 5 years it happened for me. Sometimes it takes 10, 20, 30, you know, or never. So it really depends first on your goals. Second, for me, just speaking personally, I felt like it was time for me. I recently had a baby. I got to clear my head and really kind of jump off the treadmill and think about what goals my business had and where I needed to be. And I felt like at that point, I had grown it as big as I could, just me, bootstraps, pulling favors, and really scrappy. And I was ready, you know, for a larger backing. And that's when I kind of realized that it was time to start seeking companies that could really support my vision and what I was looking to do with the company. And I really couldn't do that on my own anymore. So it was time for me. And we're one of the biggest conferences in the fashion and beauty space at this time. So I wanted to do it while we were really big and hot, before we had a ton of competitors and weren't able to sell. So, you know, that's another struggle that a lot of entrepreneurs go for. It's, you know, when is the right time? Do I sell while I'm hot? Wait until you're going down, you could take that risk of not selling at all. So it's really this fine balance of when is the right time. So for me, with having a baby and getting to this part of my career, I was ready to just have a bigger team and bigger advisors behind me and just have more strategy behind everything that I was doing. And just, you know, it's kind of been me and then my team. So I haven't really had a person to talk to other than mentors in the industry, but really I have some amazing smart people, you know, behind my business now, which is really exciting. So I think it's going to take us to a new level.
Yeah. And right now you're sitting in a new office, right?
Yeah. So we just all moved in together under one roof. So now I'm overseeing Nylon on the West Coast. So we have Nylon, the magazine, we've got Socialite, which is our sister company, and they're a digital influencer agency, and then, of course, Simply. So we're all now under one roof in LA, and we're actually in Liberace's old penthouse in West Hollywood. We've got a pool. It's pretty, like, amazing, the views that you can see from this office. So we're excited.
Oh, well, yeah, that's really good. And so how does Simply fit into the Nylon structure? You mentioned there's Socialite, there's a Nylon magazine, and so Simply would provide conferences?
Yeah, so we're more of the event arm. So we do our conferences, we do our workshops, we obviously have our digital, our celebrity arm, so it really fits into the pie perfectly. So obviously Nylon is a print magazine, they have an online presence, they also do a lot of digital content, TV and film and all that world. So, you know, they're amazing in what they do. Socialite represents traditional bloggers, non-celebrities, so they do casting and then also management, And then we have the conferences, all the event activation opportunities, and then also our celebrity clients that we represent. So everything that they don't have, we help fill in the gap.
Nice. And so when did you start the conversation with Nylon?
It was when my baby was 3 months old. She's now a year and a half. So it was, I think, March of last year, or yeah, so like a year and a half ago, was the initial conversation. So I reached out to maybe five companies that I really thought would be a good fit for what we do. And they were interested. And we did conversations. I was talking to other companies at the time. And then really got it narrowed in probably October, November of last year. I was between two companies, and then I ended up going with Nylon, and then it was all the fun legal stuff, for about 3 to 6 months. And then it was official in, I think, April or May. So, yeah, it's only been a few months, but it's been amazing. I'm really, really happy with them. They're a great team over there. And like I said, the CEO is fantastic. He's a great person to work for and really lets me go with my vision and my creative, vision for the company, and just supports. So it's awesome.
And so one more question is, what would you say was your biggest challenge when you were going into the acquisition process? Either it could be at any stage, in the beginning process or now. What's the biggest challenge you had?
I think for me was deciding on the valuation of the company, and I hired someone to help with that, but it's not a widget where it's like, we've sold 20 million units of this item that costs $3. Like, it's kind of buying me and buying the brand, in a sense. So it was really hard to put a number on it. So I hired a lot of outside help to come in for that portion of it. So I think, that was a struggle, figuring out that number.
Okay. Or another question. So for entrepreneurs who do want to become acquired or sell their company, what's something that they can do if they were in the similar situation as you?
Definitely seek outside help. You can't do it all, getting an amazing, financial expert, to help. I hired someone that helped put all of my numbers together, my projections, all of those packages that really helped me sell the business. So he came into meetings with me and he really helped guide me through this process. So I think that's really important. Unless you already have a CFO or someone of that level within your organization, then they can help, do that for the transaction. And then obviously a good lawyer, that helps a lot. This is obviously new for me. This is the first time I've ever sold a business. And just having that guidance and, help along the way, I text him on weekends and, it's selling your firstborn baby pretty much. And it's really hard to take the emotions out of it and just think as a business person. So that's another tip, is really hard to do, but taking your emotions out of it and not taking it personally, and really finding just a good fit. That's the most important thing. You're going to be working with this company for how many years, unless it's a straight transaction. You need to be comfortable and really vibe with the people that you're going to be working with on a day-to-day basis. So make sure, if you want creative control, putting that in the contract and making sure that, they don't acquire you and then you're put out on the curb and have no say anymore, because it's your vision and it's your company. So yes, it might be owned by someone else, but you still want that say.
All right. So thank you for talking about that. And so let's go back in time. In 2004, you graduated from Philadelphia University with a degree in fashion merchandising and a concentration in marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you go into that field and what did you want to become back then?
I didn't even know what I wanted to do when I was probably a junior in high school until I went on a field trip to like Bon-Ton. I don't know if you know that. Back in Bon-Ton, it's like a department store back in Pennsylvania. And I went on a field trip and it was with buyers. And I thought, wow, this is the coolest job ever. You get to shop for a living. I'm going to school for that. So that's when I made up my mind that's what I wanted to do. And so I chose Philadelphia University. I wanted to be close to home, but I didn't have to be at home. So Philly was about 2 hours from where I grew up. And I liked it because it was a small school. And, you know, but I was also in a big city. So I kind of got that college life, but had the focus and had to be in class. They took roll every day. So I originally wanted to go to be a buyer. And after about a year, I decided I did not want to be a buyer anymore. But I did love fashion. And at the time, my sister was actually in LA, and she was rising up in and director of marketing at Von Dutch in their heyday. So she was doing all kinds of cool stuff in LA, and as I was talking to her, realized that that could be a potential for me because she left Von Dutch and started her own PR agency. I did not even know PR was a job. And then when I realized it was, I thought, this is the coolest thing that you could possibly do in life. Like, this is amazing. So after college, the whole 4 years, I was like, I'm moving to LA, that's it. And I did. So after I graduated, I spent the summer in Philly just kind of saving up money, doing a bunch of jobs, and took that, went to moved to LA, and I started working with my sister pretty soon after I moved out. And I was doing fashion PR. So we worked with tons of brands. I worked with her for like 8 to 10 years, and we launched Tom's Shoes. We worked with runway brands. We worked with young contemporaries. So I learned a lot in those years and made a lot of different relationships. And I was always kind of known as the nice girl in PR. Not many are. So everyone always said like, oh, you need to be mean. You're not going to get ahead. But I was like, no, I think this is my thing. I want to be nice. And so over those years, I met a lot of different people, like celebrities and stylists and bloggers and designers and all of these people that really I just grew really great relationships with. And after about 8 years after working in PR, I was just kind of done with it, you know? It's like, it ran its course, and I wanted to do something where I could really change people's lives. And I always was a connector, so I always found myself connecting, whether it was, you know, girls contacting me that wanted to be a stylist, and I'd connect them with stylist relationships, or celebrities coming to me wanting, you know, to meet a designer, so I connect in that way. So I was always doing that, and I wanted to create a platform where I could just do that as my job. So that's when I realized that I wanted to start the conference. And there you go.
Yeah, before getting into the conference, let's talk more about what you worked on with your sister. So your sister is Caroline, and it was with Caro Marketing.
Yeah.
And you were the vice president in charge of VIP relations.
Mm-hmm.
So that included stylists, editors, celebrities, publicists, and more. And you handled networking efforts. You included coordinating and building new relationships and staying in touch with people that you previously met or worked with. So what's specifically did you do, like more examples of types of work that you did for clients?
Yeah, so if a fashion brand hired us to do their PR, I was pitching in the first few years to the press, but then as maybe 5-10 years into it, I was really the one, kind of the face of the company, where I was out at all the events, I was networking, I was getting our name out there, I was meeting with all the different celebrities that came in, all the top level stylists. I would do whatever it took to get that client or one of our clients, which is a designer, get it onto that celebrity. So I would drive to the stylist's house and bring in a huge rack of clothes and say, which one do you like? Please choose it, you know. Or I would bring in, you know, hound the celebrities and tell them to come in, and I'd help style them for their big events if they didn't have a stylist. So I was really out there hustling every single day to get our clients onto talent. That was really my end goal, is getting it onto red carpets, onto talent, and getting our name out there as, you know, the premier PR agency that every brand needed to hire.
So you mentioned two things. First, you started, the first few years were pitching to the press, and then later you were getting styles worn by different talents.
Mm-hmm. Right,
that's correct. Okay, so let's go back to the first one, pitching the press. Who were you pitching the press for, and what was that process like?
I mean, it was so different back then. It's not like today. Our contacts were so valuable, so it was really a lot of cultivating those relationships. So taking trips out to New York and doing desk sides and press days, where we would take all of our clients, we'd set up a big, you know, presentation, invite all the editors from all the magazines, and really, you know, pitching our clients, but also building those relationships. So then when we call Cosmo Magazine, they know who we are and they pick up, because they're getting hundreds of calls and hundreds of emails a day, and really building those relationships. So then when we had a relevant pitch, they would answer us. So it was a lot of New York trips. It was a lot of email pitches. It was a lot of phone calls, sending out gifting to them, and really getting our products, our clients' products, in front of them. And so we'd have to come up with some really interesting pitches that got them noticed, which I use all of these skills today still. I remember one instance, one of our clients, it was a shapewear brand, and we always would ask our clients, what's your top five press placements? Like, if we would knock it out of the park, what five do you want? Like, your dream. And they gave us the list, and one was LA Times. And we had a relationship with them, but they weren't responding to all of our pitches. I get it. They're getting a million a day. So what we did was we took this whole shipper session, and we got a cake from one of the best delivery places in LA. And we showed up at LA Times with this huge cake and the full collection of the shapewear. And we said, and we put it on our desk, and we said, now you can have your cake and eat it too. Please feature this brand. Boom, the next Sunday paper, huge feature. So thinking outside the box and really thinking of creative ways to get your product and your client noticed. Look, that cost them maybe $50, but it got them one of their dream goals. So I think using that and thinking about it as an entrepreneur and thinking, look, okay, what are my goals this year? Put five down. Don't put 500 because you'll never achieve them. Really think targeted and go after those 5 to 10 goals that you really want and hit it hard. And don't stop until you get yes.
Yeah, and so was it that person's birthday that you brought them the cake, or it was just...
No. Okay. Because shapewear, look, you can eat the cake and then you put the shapewear on, you're fine. So it was really just to get that feature. We did the same thing when we launched Tom's Shoes. People, like, no one was responding. It was this, you know, it was a new concept. So we are like, okay, what are we going to do? One of his goals is LA Times, Vogue, all of these different outlets. So we took one shoe, you know, the Tom's, like, a shoe. That was, no one was doing shoes like that at the time. So we put on the bottom, to get the other half of the story, call us. So they've got one shoe, and all the editors are calling, what the heck? I only got one shoe. Everyone was calling us. We're like, aha. This got them calling. They're interested because they only had one shoe to get the other half. They had to call us and figure out the rest of the story. So then, I mean, we got Toms everywhere those first few months. And it was insane to be a part of that. It was incredible.
And earlier you said that what worked then, it's very different now. So how is it different now?
Well, now, you know, PR agencies are struggling because... You can find, I mean, the reason you pay a PR agency is because of their contacts, number one. It's, you're tapping into their database because they have all the contacts of all the editors and magazines. But now you can just go online and find anyone on LinkedIn and, you know, all of these different resources, and you can contact them directly. So what's the difference? Like, why am I going to pay a PR agency? There's also, now that bloggers have become so huge, you can, you know, take that budget that you're paying a PR agency and budget it towards bloggers and get a guaranteed ROI. You get them to tag you, you get them to use your hashtag, as opposed to kind of the guessing game with PR, where it's like, here's $5,000 worth of products, let's cross our fingers and hope it works. You can be much more strategic and just do pay to play with influencers and bloggers and even advertorial with magazines. So you can really just take that budget and pay for it and guarantee that you get the messaging and your hashtags and your handles and everything that you want. So it's tough with PR. I mean, I see both sides, but it's hard now because everything is so available online.
And I really do want to talk about this concept, and I think it probably ties into the Simply Digital Network and the work that you do there. But maybe I'll save that for a little bit later, and then we'll just continue with this line of the conversation. But so the next thing is, you said you were networking. So in the second half of your career at Carl Marketing, you were doing a lot of networking, going out to events. How important was that in that stage of your career?
It was everything. And I networked from the day I moved to LA, not just to the end. I was out at every event, any invite I could get, I said yes to. I was everywhere. This was my single days too, before I had a baby and all that stuff. But I thought it was just the coolest thing, A, but B, I could build all of these relationships. And I was building it with, you know, assistant editors and assistant producers and coordinators and all the people that were kind of at my level when I first started. But now those people are director level. So you kind of meet them as you're, you know, building your career, and you continue that friendship and relationship. And then now, mid-30s, all of these people are top level. So I can pick up the phone and call all of these relationships that I had, and we were all struggling and trying to like scrape two pennies together. Now we're like, you know, we're the higher level. So it really, really, really helps. Same with celebrities. A lot of these girls, I remember Zoe Saldana coming into our showroom, and she's like, I don't have a stylist. Can you help like give me some clothes? That was before all of her big movies. And you know, you meet these people on their way up. Everyone starts somewhere, and it's really maintaining those relationships and helping them, even when they're not an A-lister at the time, because you never know where someone will end up. And so that was kind of what I did for 10 years, and now I use those relationships all the time with my conferences and everything else that I'm doing. So it is 100%, like, so important. I suggest that to everyone. Like, go out to at least 2 to 3 nights, go into events or dinners or just getting yourself out there. You never know. Every time I go to an event, I get something new happens, whether it's a speaker from our conference or a new deal for us. Or it's like, it always is worth it, no matter what.
And so you were very intentional with your networking back then, but how do you know what, I guess if you were to break down your process of networking into a process, I'm sure you probably don't think of it this way, but the specific actions that you took, which would be you were looking specifically to connect with like the assistant editors, or how did these relationships form and what were you looking to get out of it?
So I am a big fan of in person. So instead of just emailing a pitch to an assistant editor, say, I'd say, hey, when can you meet for coffee? And then I'd meet them for coffee. So even if it's a daytime coffee, or hey, can you meet for drinks? Like, I had a budget to take out editors, so I would take them out to drinks, and we wouldn't really talk business. It would just be building that relationship. And then I throw in, oh, hey, need some clothes? Let me send you some stuff from one of our clients. Okay. And it's not a hard pitch. It's just really being friendly and having that friendship relationship. you know, and then do like a soft pitch here and there after you know each other. So kind of not going in for the kill right in the beginning, but building it. So my intentions were really just to have that face-to-face connection. If I got a friendship out of it, great. If not, you know, you don't click with everyone. But a lot of people, you know, I'm a dot connector, so I'd always be planning dinners with a bunch of girls and connecting all my friends, and I still do that today. Great. If they need someone that I can connect them with, I want to help them, because if you can help someone else, amazing. It just solidifies your relationship with them. I always say going into a new relationship or networking opportunity, never ask what they can do for you. Always ask what you can do for them. So in that first meeting, you know, they may need, oh shoot, I'm doing a story on denim, and you don't rep a denim client, but your friend that's another publicist does, connect them. Why not? If you're helping them with something else, they will appreciate that and owe you that favor down the road. So I think just being a good person and just kind of learning who they are as a person and how you can connect and help them is number one. And then just, you know, staying in touch.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you're networking so much, how do you stay on top of it? Because, you know, there's too many people to email, too many people to follow up with. How do you manage that?
I know, it's hard. I would keep them in a little category. So in my contacts, I have people categorized. Like my one category was like Invite LA. And all those people I put in that list. So whenever we did an event for one of our clients, I'd invite all those people. So they always like kind of hear from me or see from me. I'd also keep all our stylists in a category, all of our celebrities, all of these different types of people. So then whenever we had something that came up that was relevant to them, I'd always make sure that I'd have them invited. So I was a big, big category user in my contacts. It really helps, because otherwise they're just lost in your contacts and you forget about them.
Yeah. Is there any software that you use to help you manage your emails and or just manage your customer, or I guess like a CRM or any other emails?
I have used Outlook for years. I love Outlook. But I've just had to switch to Gmail through Nylon. And I'm getting used to it. There's still categories, which is great. So now I'm in Gmail. But I would just suggest using categories for all your contacts. Like never just throwing someone in your contacts. Always be intentional of all the different categories. So even if it's like, I have a category that's girl bosses. So it's all entrepreneurs that live in LA. So whenever I do my girl boss dinner, I can invite all of them. So I have all of these different categories, and some people might fit into five of them. Some might fit into one, but just always kind of having someone in each bucket. So then you can always kind of follow up when things are relevant.
Okay, nice. And then, so one thing that you mentioned is that you did a lot of favors, and I read in another article of you that when you did start Simply, you were pulling all the favors that you had asked, and you were asking all of them for favors. Let's talk about that. Actually, before that, let's talk about why you wanted to break off on your own and take that leap.
I know it was the hardest decision, I think, of my life, because working for your sister, it makes it 10 times harder. But it was one of those things that, you know, I was constantly just not beaten down, but almost by our clients. You know, they were never happy. I was working my butt off. I was doing everything I could to like get them all these placements and do amazing work that I really was proud of. And, you know, I'd deliver something and I'd be so excited. And then I'd hear from them and they're like, great, what's next? On to the next. And I'm like, oh, but this was so amazing. You're this unknown brand. We got you in Vogue. And, you know, so it was just constantly like never good enough. And I was just done with it. I was like, I want to build my own brand and I want to do it with kindness. And I want people to be happy to come to my events. And I want to be surrounded by happiness and not like, what can you do more? What can you do better? That's not good enough. So I was kind of over that. And so I had a lot of meetings with my sister. And I remember one day she said to me, she's like, what is your passion? And no one's ever asked me that. So for me, I took a few days, thought about it, and realize that my passion is connecting people. I love connecting people. And that's probably why I worked in PR for all those years, why I was did everything I did in life, because I'm truly, I love seeing other people happy, and I love connecting other people. And then I took a few days to really think about how I would do that as a job. And I came back to my sister and I said, I've got it figured out. I know what I want to do. And I'm so sorry, but I have to leave your company. But she was so supportive, and I gave her obviously tons of time, and I helped her find a replacement for me and helped her, you know, be okay. And I gave myself 3 months to start my first conference. And I was like, we were one of the first, you know, conferences didn't really exist that were cool and fresh, and it was very techy and in a conference setting and boring and not Instagrammable and all of that fun stuff. So we were really the first, and that was 5.5 years ago. And I just went at it, guns loaded, ready to go. And that's when I started, like, you know, I built my website. I started figuring out who was going to be speaking and how that was relevant and who our audience was going to be, and putting our vision board together of, you know, what brands I wanted to work with and, you know, where I saw the company going, and kind of put all my PR skills to use and started picking up the phone and just doing phone calls. And after that, the 3 months of planning, we had our first conference in LA, and we had 750 people there. So it was, it kind of gave me the validation that this is something that really was needed in the industry. And from there, we added on more cities and just kept continuing to grow.
And so when you started, you hired multiple companies to help you create that conference, right? A marketing agency or another person to help with sponsorship. Is that correct? Or you were...
Yeah, so I partnered with a company expertise in building sponsorships. So they really helped us, you know, kind of build out our collateral and our decks and our materials, because, you know, I came from PR. I didn't come from sponsorship sales. I didn't really have those relationships. So I seek, you know, someone that did. And that's definitely a key as an entrepreneur, is finding people that, you know, help where you don't have those relationships. Or skills. So we hired them. I also, one of my interns when I worked at Carol was like, can I come work with you? And so she came over and helped me a lot. Ended up hiring her, and she worked with me for almost 5 years. So she was a big help in the very beginning days. And then so we had that same company help develop our website and kind of just went with it and didn't have too much, you know, of a business plan at that point. We just went and did it. And then after that, once it was a success, then we really started to strategize and plan and think about, you know, how to really build this out. So it's grown a lot since then. I look back at that first event and I'm like, oh my God, it was horrible. But you know, you have to grow. You have to learn the hard way. And I think we did.
So I want to go back. You said sponsorship procurement, and because you were in the PR, but you were looking for someone who had the connections and the experience in sponsorship. How important is that in building a conference, the sponsorship piece?
I mean, that's our revenue. It's sponsors and ticket sales. So that's 50% of it. So if you don't have sponsors, it's really hard to pull off an event unless it's fully based on ticket sales. And our event, our model is both. So it's ticket sales and sponsors. So that's definitely a huge part of how we produce it.
And so the company that you worked with, how did you find that company?
She was introduced to me by someone in the industry, and he thought that we would, you know, be great together. And I still work with her today. She does web development and branding, and um, She's a good friend of mine, so we've maintained that relationship throughout. So it's been amazing. And I couldn't have done it without her from the beginning. I mean, she was a huge help, and we would spend late nights just up drinking wine and figuring out, like, okay, how do we do this? You know, it was a learning process for both of us, since we were creating something that had never been done before, really, in this space. So it's tough, but you just got to kind of run with it, see what works, see what doesn't work.
So is that person Johanna?
Yeah.
Okay, Johanna and Marissa, right, from Willa.
Willa Creative, yep. And she actually was at the conference. She also has the line Lily and Jasper, and they were at our conference at Simply LA.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So when you said that when you look back at creating your first conference, that you had a moment of like things that you could have done better or lessons learned, what are some of the things that you learned from that first conference that you improved on in the future conferences?
Oh my gosh, so many. One that sticks out is the production, and our gift bags were nowhere where they are today. The gift bags were like this paper bag with like a sticker stuck on it, just like not good. And the items inside, it was like maybe $40 worth of products compared to today. Now it's like, you got the gift bag, right? It's like probably $1,000 worth of products and this amazing tote and just beautiful. So that has definitely changed. Also the programming. So that first conference was, I think it was only one panel, maybe two. And now, of course, we have 40 plus speakers. So we've just elevated the, you know, amount of content that's provided. And then also the production of the brand experience. So that first one, it was, you know, brands would set up with a little easel in their sign, and the signage wasn't good, and the tables, it was just like a 6-foot table, and no one really did a cool build out, which now we make all of our brand partners do, because that's part of the experience. Like, we live in an Instagram age now, and it's like everything has to be beautiful and everything has to be on social media and Instagrammable. So that's definitely changed. If you see our first conference, it's like embarrassing what the brand experience looked like. So yeah, I think those few things definitely stand out. And we did a deal with Groupon for that first one, and that was a mistake, because it was all these people, they're like, not our audience, not our demographic, and just there for like a free goodie bag, and never again. So a few mistakes we made.
What would you say is the biggest challenge in creating a conference?
The biggest challenge?
Yeah.
So many challenges. gosh, to pick just one. I think sponsorships are a big one. You know, it's hard to get brands, especially in a cluttered market. There's a lot of different events and conferences happening, and to get them to sign up to yours is definitely a struggle. So that was a big reason with this acquisition. I wanted to be a part of a larger sales team. So, you know, now Nylon can sell us as part of one of their packages, and it's a, you know, it's just more tentacles out there in the industry that are pitching you and getting your name out there, and, you know, bigger partnerships. So I think that's a big struggle, definitely. And then, you know, production is, you know, we've now outsourced a lot of that to help elevate our production. You can see the difference just from this Simply LA to last year's was huge. So I think those two things really make or break a conference.
And you have conferences in LA. You've also had it in Chicago, Dubai, and I think New York. So how are you creating conferences in all these locations? And are there different challenges in one location versus the other?
Yes. I mean, Dubai is like across the world, so that's really hard. You know, it's trusting our partner over there. You know, we can't even get on a phone call because it's like 6 a.m. here is 7 p.m. there, or whatever the, you know, it's this opposite time schedule. So over there, it's hard. You know, it's really trusting our partner that can execute everything. New York and LA are two biggest. So a lot of the brands want to sign on for those cities. A lot of the speakers are in those cities, so that makes it a little bit easier. But, you know, New York is triple the price of LA. It's so expensive there. So it's finding good partners that can really help offset costs for us in New York. And then Chicago, it's like small town but big, and it's harder to find brands that want to activate in Chicago as opposed to New York or LA. But our audience is like diehard in Chicago. We have so many people that come to that conference. So we just kind of have to structure it a little bit differently there. So Chicago is smaller than LA and New York. We usually do 1 to 2 panels as opposed to 5. So we just shorten it a little bit in terms of content, but more intimate for the attendees and the brand. So it's just, you know, kind of changing with what works and what doesn't work in each city. And now we've been doing it for a few years, so we kind of know how to structure it in each city.
And so you use the term the activate your brand or brand activation. What does that mean? And what do brands get out of being a part of your conference? What kind of return or what do they see as a benefit to participating?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so activation is really how they're representing their brand. So some brands come in and they'll do a huge build out and build walls and create this literally like a pop-up shop. So, you know, they can go as big as that, or they could, you know, do a smaller activation where they, you know, just sample their products and things like that. So what brands can get out of it is two things. One is meeting the up-and-coming influencers, because a lot of the people that come to our event, they are killing it in their career. They're really pushing for their, you know, their business, and they're strong entrepreneurs. Obviously, if they're taking the step to come to our conference and making the investment and being there and, you know, all of that. So brands want to meet with these people. They're all micro influencers now, or, you know, smaller tiered influencers. But a lot of people that have attended our conference have ended up on our panel a few years later. So it's really getting them when they're on their way up, which brands are really excited about, because, you know, once they're at that top level, it's kind of hard to touch them. They also get that interaction with our speakers, which are, you know, the top tier. And then on the other end, as of this year, we opened up more of a consumer route. So people that just love fashion and beauty can come and purchase products, sample them. So it's for brands, they get to meet with influencers, but also consumers. So they can sell their product, they can get it in the hands of, you know, their customers and influencers. And we also implemented a direct ROI for them. So everyone that comes to the event gets a passport, where every single person has to come and meet with all of the brands and get a stamp. And that stamp could have them, you know, you have to sign up for their newsletter, follow them on Instagram, or hear their pitch or try their products, which is great for the brands and also great for the attendees, because sometimes people are shy coming to conferences and you don't want to like just walk up to someone and say, hey, here's who I am, here's my business, and start pitching yourself. So it's a good kind of icebreaker for both parties to really engage and build relationships, but also for the brand, where they get, you know, at the end of the day, they get hundreds of new signups for their newsletter or followers or things like that. So it's really a win-win for both.
All right. So yeah, thank you for talking about that. And let's talk about your Simply Digital Network. Why did you want to start that back in the early years?
I didn't even think of it, to be honest. Like, I did not think that would be a part of our business. I was like, only conference, like, that's it, that's all I want to do, and kept my blinders on, and things kept coming my way. I'm like, no, push it to the side. And finally, after maybe 2 or 3 years, it just kept falling in my lap. All of these celebrities that I worked with in my PR days would say to me, like, you know all this stuff about blogging, can you help me? So I'd help them as a favor or help kind of get them up and running. And then I'm like, oh, just throw my name on your site for sponsored stuff. You don't want people contacting you directly. That's crazy. You're this huge name. So I just throw my name up there. And after we had a few clients, we started getting major momentum. And I was like, no, we don't need a business. We don't need to start another wing of our business. Like, that's crazy. And then I kept denying it. And then all of a sudden I'm like, all right, I can't deny this anymore. This is becoming too big. And I created Simply Digital. So it's kind of like one of those things that just keeps following you, falling in your lap. It's like, you have to say yes to it. The universe is telling me something. I got to go with this. So, yeah, now we have, once I opened it up and said yes, and let's do this and let's move forward. Now we have, I think, 19 or 20 clients, all celebrities. And we manage and advise them on all of their digital platforms. And some we help create content for, and we help, you know, outsource and develop their website for them. Some we just help them monetize. So everyone's a little bit different in how we work with them. But I love all of our clients. They're all so amazing. And it's been just an absolute pleasure to work with all of them, because it's super cool to see them grow this whole other end of their business. You know, they have acting and music and, you know, whatever it is their first and foremost career, but we're their supplementary arm for digital. And it's an industry that, you know, they really don't know that much about, because it's not, you know, they're not a traditional blogger that grew up in the blogging age and figured out how to make it work. They have a lot of followers that want to see what they're wearing or what beauty products they love, and they want their own platform for it. So we help them create that and help them make money while they're at it.
So what's one of the most common requests that the influencers want from Simply Digital?
A lot of them, you know, want to know how to monetize. Like, that's obviously number one. If they're putting all this effort and resources into something, they want to know what's the return on it. So that's probably number one, being honest. Number two, a lot of them are very busy, so they want our help with creating the content and their social. So that's another one I think that, is very helpful for them, because, I mean, I see even me, I can't even post on social more than once a week. I'm like, I can't be bothered, but I can imagine them with their schedules. So having someone that, you know, puts a calendar together and really strategizes that for them is very helpful.
How do you... If someone does want to work with you for monetization, how do you identify what are the best clients for them to work with, and what is that process like for you? What, like, if you haven't, you take on someone, what are the first steps that you do to help them identify who to work with, and then how do you help them in that way?
Yeah, for our clients, you know, they all kind of fit in the same arena, but they're all different. So our girl is like, you know, we have Olivia Culpo and Jamie Chung and Nastia Lukin and Lauren Bushnell. Like, they're all these like fashion it girls or beauty it girls. They all would probably be friends with each other if they all knew each other. So they kind of fit in that mold. So that's number one. They all have to be similar, because that's kind of our audience and who we work with. Number two, we evaluate their site and their social. So we'll give them any tips or pointers. We'll even point them to like webinars that maybe they should take or anything like that to really help them make sure that their content is highly curated and looks good and able to be monetized. Same with their website. If they need a refresher, then we can, you know, help outsource something like that to help, you know, just refresh them, getting them up to 2017. If they need a site built completely, we can help them do that too. Everything from logo development to content creation, everything. So once we're good in terms of their social and their blog, then we have a brainstorm with them and say, look, who do you want to be working with? What are your end goals? Like, kind of creating their little vision board of where they want to see themselves. And for us, it's a little bit trickier because they also have agents and managers traditionally. So for them as an actor or, you know, whatever their number one profession is. So we sometimes work hand in hand with them, sometimes work completely separately, but figuring out what they can and can't do with existing relationships. So they might be the face of a beauty brand. We can't go after any beauty brands in that case. So figuring out what we can and can't work with. And then we start pitches. So we'll proactively outreach to brands that they want to work with. We also receive incoming pitches, you know, from anyone on their website that's looking to work with them. So we are that first line of communication, so we can, you know, decide if it's worthwhile or not for them to work with them. And then we bring all of the opportunities to them, talk about it, and decide if we want to move forward or not. And based on, you know, their longevity of their career, that's always first and foremost. We don't want to just sell out for like one Instagram post and for some brand that doesn't fit with who they are, because they'll lose followers and it's not organic. So we really make sure that everything's very organic for, you know, everyone that we work with.
And so in terms of the monetary, I guess, the relationship with you, do they need to pay you a certain amount for work, or is it a percentage? And how does that relationship work?
Yeah, if we're creating content for them and providing that service, then there's a monthly retainer for that. If we're just helping them monetize, then it's a percentage of sponsored deals. So depends on how they want to work with us and what capacity.
Okay, and so, and I know we're coming close to the end of the interview. I did have a lot more questions, and I'll just close it off, and I'll say with the last few questions. So what books or people have inspired you?
What books or people
have inspired you?
A lot. My favorite entrepreneurs. Well, I love Blake Mycoskie from Tom's Shoes. I think he's such an inspiration, and being able to have worked with him was incredible. I love Gary Vee. I'm obsessed with him. I love Mark Cuban, and I love Richard Branson. So I think those are my go-tos. In terms of books, I can't say it on it, but The Subtle Art of Not Giving a...
Okay. Who is the author? Do you remember?
I don't.
Oh, okay. I'll look it up, and yeah. I'll include it. So how important is it to find a mentor?
Huge, 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 huge. It's finding multiple mentors that you can call and you trust, and because it's a scary world out there if you're by yourself. You know, and you can ask. You know, I'm lucky. My husband is such an entrepreneur, so we have a lot of business talks at night, and I feel like he's helped me a lot in my business. I also have many mentors that, you know, depending on what the question is or what I'm going through, that I can call and ask. But I think it's everything. You know, you need that advice. Or nowadays, you can listen to podcasts and look online for interviews and really expanding your knowledge, because you don't know everything. You'll never know everything. So finding those people that you really trust and being able to call them and ask for help is huge.
Oh, and so the book, The Subtle Art, is from Mark Manson. So just saying that. So given that you've worked in the industry for a number of years, what would you say is an interesting surprise or a shock that you learned that someone outside of the industry wouldn't have known in, like, with either the conference business, brand partnerships, PR, or sponsorship business? Is there something that you would know because you've been in that industry for a long time?
That the industry is very small, maybe. I mean, it seems like this massive industry, but everyone is like one to two connections away. So if you think that you can never get in contact with someone or it's so hard, I mean, literally through LinkedIn or through your Facebook friends, you're probably just one or two connections away from that person that you really want to talk to. So the sky is the limit, and it is a very small industry. So don't think that you can't do anything that you want.
And looking back at your career, what are you most proud of?
Probably the acquisition. That was like, I did not think that was going to happen. So, and especially like me doing all the negotiations and me being, you know, really the forefront of this. I think that was pretty incredible, I have to say.
And what sacrifices have you had to make growing your business?
You know, I have a baby, like I mentioned. She's a year and a half now, so I would love to just be at home with her every day and snuggling and kissing her, but, you know, I sacrifice a lot, and a lot of it is time with her, time with my family, and, you know, it's finding that balance that, you know, it's kind of like a unicorn. You can never achieve it, but trying as hard as you can to find that, and, I've given up many nights with her and weeks and going and traveling, but I would not trade it for the world because I am so incredibly blessed with my career and getting to travel to places I do and do, you know, connecting all these people. It's my dream. So, yeah.
And so what advice would you give to yourself, your younger self, if you were just starting now?
Probably to always outsource what you're not good at. In the beginning days, I would always try to do everything. I would say outsource, and I was pretty fearless back then, but I would still tell myself, like, you can do anything you want, be fearless, because dreams happen and they come true if you are fully committed and if you go for what you want.
All right, so thank you. And so the mission of the Javier Morquecho Show is to share stories of entrepreneurs, corporate executives, and thought leaders and create a community around how to start, grow, and scale a business. And if anyone wants to reach out to you, how can they do that?
Instagram is probably the best. I'm Sarah P. Boy. It's my personal. And then Simply is just @Simply. DM me.
And once again, this is Sarah Boyd, the president and founder of Simply Inc., which runs Simply Stylist and the Simply Digital Network. In today's business, you had a chance to learn about her starting, growing, and scaling her business. I hope you're inspired from hearing her story and go out and take action to build your business. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can subscribe to the Javier Morquecho Show in iTunes and Google Play or join our email list to stay connected. And please share this episode to spread the word. Finally, we're here to continue the conversation and we want to discuss topics that are important to you. You can visit JavierMorquecho.com to leave your comments and questions, and we look forward to hearing from you. So thank you, Sarah, for being here, and thank you, everyone, for being a part of the show. See you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
to walk on a thousand ends. Soft in the street, something skipped and never ends. Want to walk.